used to get rid of the arbitrary metric, right? So number-good action doesn't have an arbitrary metric. So we need to integrate out gamma AB. What that means in practice, we have to solve this equation of motion, right? We have to find a solution to that and plug it back in our original action, and then hope that what we'll get is going to be another good action. So notice that what we're doing here is we vary with respect to a matrix, right? So gamma AB is the symmetric matrix. And so what I'm going to do, I'm going to remind you, I'm sure you know all that, but just in case, I'm going to remind you, so the variation with respect to matrices. How are we going to do that? Well, so suppose I have MAB, so MAB is invertible matrix, and it's a symmetric one. It's important for me to have it a symmetric matrix, which is exactly the same as matrix that we're talking there. So with upper and lower indices, if I have that, that's one. Then what you can show is that delta variation with respect to M with the upper indices is A capital A, M B capital B, delta M A B. So you would have thought that you can simply to go from delta M with upper indices is just the same as delta M with lower indices raised with symmetric tensor. You would be wrong. There is an extra minus sign. Do you know guys how to derive this? Yes, all you have to do is just vary this identity and you will have zero. So that's one of the properties that we need. So the second property that we need, so if I'm going to call M, being a determinant of my matrix, determinant A and B, right? And so what we will need, and you can see that in our action, there is a determinant of the matrix. What happens, how do I write down the fluctuation of determinant of the matrix? And so the answer is that it's M times MAB delta MGB. Okay, so there is this nice formula. You want me to derive it? One line. Remind you how to do it. So how does it go? Well, first of all, let me show you a nice identity. If I have log of determinant of MAB, so it's the same as trace of log of MAB. Okay, so all these traces and determinants tells me that the results are invariant. How do I choose my basis? So if it is a symmetric matrix, I can always choose my basis. So what I can do, I'm just proving you this identity or reminding you. So what I can do, I can choose my basis so that A and B is not the degenerate matrix. So I can choose that is only a diagonal one. And then the statement is an obvious statement, right? So the first thing is a determinant is just a product. A log of a product is a sum of the logs. Okay, so that's the simplest way to prove that identity if the matrix is symmetric. But now once you have this matrix, I can do variation of both. Once you have this identity, I can put deltas on both sides. So if I put delta on the first side, I have a determinant. So I have M minus 1 variation of the determinant. And on the other side, I have MAB. So if I vary that, MAB must have an upper index now because it will be 1 over MA. You can always see in this diagonal basis. So I will have MAB and the variation of delta MA. Right, so what I did, I just put in the set.
I have a question. If some lambda is negative, the log will define
Right, so again, so this is, I'm talking about, I have to talk about, well, first of all, symmetric matrices, and then it should be, well, strictly it should be Hermitian, right? So that all the eigenvalues are positive.
But now, you want to talk about the metric,
So I have to put, absolute values, and so that determinant, I would have to put minus sign, and so I'll take care of that with putting a minus sign in front. But you're right. So simply speaking, this relation is true. This relation is, well, okay, this way of deriving it is, well, I think I can go even for the matrix if one of the eigenvalues is negative. I would just have to have a minus sign in the right place. Or the corresponding eigenvalue. Now, the reason I'm glossing it a little bit over, because so we do light cone, and that's pretty much the only time when we talk about Lorentzian Wolfshields. After that, we'll do analytical continuation, and all conformal field theories are defined on Euclidean Wolfshields. So all of the metric will be Euclidean. So I could have done it at this stage, get rid of the minus sign in the metric. But let me keep it for the calculation. All right, guys, so we have this. So let's go ahead and now do the variation. Start here again. So very with respect. So I'm not going to write down minus 1 over 4 pi, and I'm not going to write down the integral, so I'm just going to write down only the star set matters. So delta S T over delta gamma A B, right? So it's proportional to, okay, very good. So so let me vary this guy first. So I have 1/2. I have 1/2 minus gamma, which is minus 1/2. And then I have minus 1 because I have gamma, minus gamma. And then I have to vary gamma, but that's the determinant of the matrix. So it's going to be equal times gamma. Gamma, okay, let me see the way how I'm writing down. Okay, so so I'm just going to write down one thing, and then I'm going to immediately erase it. So that's a variation of the, so this minus 1 is here, and then this guy is a variation of the gamma, as given there. But what I'm going to do now I'm going to lower indices here, AB. And I'm going to keep up indices here. And once I do that, I need to put a minus sign in front because of that rule, of the first rule up there. Okay, so so we have this. And so that's from variation of a square root of minus gamma. And then I have additional gamma up here, so I'll have plus square root of minus gamma del A x mu del B x mu, and then I have delta gamma A B. Okay, so very good. So then so this equals to, sorry, what did I lose? This one? Oh, this eta?
Oh, in your first term.
Oh, then, yeah, sorry. Yeah, you're right. You're right. So then there is a, so let me do it this way. CB, so this is going to be CB, and then we got, once we multiply by LA, X mu, and I have kappa. All right, good. So that's equal. Right, so this guy here, and then there is minus the MI here. So I can erase this and put a plus one here, right? So let me do that. So now what I'm going to do, I will take out square root of minus gamma. Okay, so the first thing will give me minus 1/2, right? So then I have gamma AB del A X U del B X U here. And then I have left gamma CB with the down indices. Then from the second term, I will have plus del C x mu del B x mu. And then outside, I will have delta gamma CB. Okay? So did I erase that? There was a formula for the induced magnetic, which is Pn. So so when we talked about induced matrix, right? So remember that we introduced the induced metric is HAB, and so that's simply del X mu over, so this is just del A over X mu, del B over X mu. So this was just our induced metric, and I'm just going to use this as a shorthand notation to rewrite our variation. So this equals square root minus gamma. Then I have, as you can see, minus 1/2. So I have gamma AB times H. Gamma AB goes up. HAB. And then I have gamma CB plus HCD delta gamma CD. Okay, so you can see now that that if I'm asking that my action is stationary with respect to variation of gamma CD, okay, so this guy equals to zero. So then, so that implies that the stuff in the square brackets equals to zero. So I have HCB must be equal to 1/2 gamma CB, and then I have gamma AB times HAB. All right, you with me, guys? Good. So, so I have this condition, and I'm saying that that's enough to see that the polyhedral action is the same as the Wolf action. And the trick to do here is that, let's compute the determinant of both sides. So if we compute the determinant of both sides, so here I'll just have H. Right. Now, on the right-hand side, I have 1/2, that's a factor, but it's a 2x2 matrix, so when I'm computing a determinant, there will be a quarter. This guy is just a constant, right? So it will simply get squared. Right? And then I have left a matrix, gamma CD, and that will be just a determinant of gamma, okay? So now I have this relation, and I can rewrite this as square root of minus h, right, equals to 1/2 gamma AB H A B square root of minus gamma. So all I did, I just took a square root of that relation. And I included a minus sign because the determinant are negative. We are talking about Lorentz symbols. By the way, it's sort of related to your question. I'm sure that it's not the problem at this stage. Everything that we do works also for Lorentz matrices you can modify. But the idea of making a path integral with Lorentz convolution is actually very difficult. And nobody, one of the things that can happen is that in the Euclidean, for the Euclidean bullshit, the structure of bullshit is relatively simple, just determined by topologies, right? Now, in the case of Lorentzian bullshit, there can be a black hole of the bullshit. And I'm not talking about black holes in, you know, d-dimensional space. I'm talking about black hole on this 1 plus 1 dimensional field theory. This our 1 plus 1 dimensional field theory is a gravity, the theory of gravity. It includes metrics. So the instant you make a Lorentzian bullshit, you can create black holes. And so find exactly sort of trying to go ahead and quantizing Lorentzian bullshit is very difficult. And I don't think it's been done. That's why what we end up doing is we end up doing an analytical continuation and talking about it. All right, guys, so we have that relation. We have that relation and we are done. The reason why we are done is because I can show you that the Fourier correction is the same. Is the same as Lambert-Hutto action. So let's go ahead. So the Fourier correction, remember, is minus 1 over 4 pi alpha pi. So the integral over m, d tau d sigma. Then I have minus gamma, gamma ab, del a x mu, del b x mu. Okay, and so what I can do, well, I can, but again, now here I'm substituting for the matrix gamma AB, the one that satisfies this condition. I don't need to solve this condition anymore, so I'm sure you can. So I have minus gamma, then I have gamma AB, then I have H AB, right? So because all these del AX, del BX is just the induced metric, H AB. And so you can see that what I have there is actually this structure up here. And so so if my metric gamma satisfies the equations of motion, this is exactly the same. So gamma, I will say on shell, which by that I simply mean that it satisfies the equation of motion, and this becomes minus 1 over 4 pi alpha prime. An integral d tau d sigma. Okay, and now this combination here is simply twice the square root of minus h. Right? This was the one half there. And so what we are having that this is minus 1 over 2 pi alpha prime an integral d tau d sigma square root of minus h, and that's our Lambert-Hutto function. So we show that at least classically, they're the same.
So
one
question, you took the square root of the solution with absolute values.
Right, but
it's positive?
Yes, it's positive because, even if the metrics are Lorentzian, so this is like taking an inverse of the metric. Inverse of the metric and multiplying it with itself. So you will always get a positive number.
But if this Lorentzian metric is if sigma is time, tau is space,
yes,
then it will be that.
No, because see, the induced metric will have minus along tau.
Talk about gamma.
Right. So there is this relation here, and I know that if we talk about Lorentzian bullshit, that both gamma and h are negative.
Yeah, but if for gamma metric,
yes,
for H metric,
yes,
the tau is time, sigma is space.
Yes.
But now if I choose such a gamma that the tau is space.
Right. So the quick answer to your question is that you agree that there is a coordinate system in which this is the right thing. If I will say, so tau and sigma are arbitrary, and you agree that if I choose tau coordinate on the bullshit to be exactly the same as the space-time time, then there is no problem.
Yeah.
Now, the statements, if you agree with that, then that's the end of the story, because all the statements here are invariant under the choice of coordinate system. They're invariant under reparametrization. So we just agreed with you that there is a special choice of how I choose the world sheet time tau. If I make tau, right? So if I make the tau, which I'm free to make it any way I want, but if I say that tau equals to x naught, then all minus signs are aligned in space-time and on the world sheet. And so there is no problem. But the thing is that the quantities that I'm discussing here, they are independent. They cannot depend on how I choose coordinate system. Right? See, the contraction here is the right contraction. It's invariant under reparametrization invariant. Those guys, H and gamma, they are determinants of symmetric. They're also invariant under reparametrization invariant.
But my question is, if you choose a set of coordinates, tau, sigma, now fixed tau and sigma.
Yes.
For this coordinate, the H, for H matrix, the tau is time.
Yeah.
And for
gamma
matrix, the tau is space. So one is minus plus, one is
but
plus.
But I'm saying that it doesn't matter how you choose coordinate system because you are computing determinants. And determinants are insensitive to what you exactly call tau and sigma. That's if you think what I'm saying that there is a coordinate system in which that's the right choice of signs. And I'm saying that all quantities here are invariant under diffeomorphism invariant. And the stuff that you're talking about are, you know, different relabeling of coordinates. And the diffeomorphism group includes, in particular, you know, you call tau and sigma, call it different names. Yeah, call what you call tau, call it sigma. All right, guys, so Namoguto is the same as Polyakov. And so now we come to a very interesting stuff. It's not the same. So do you agree that it's the same? You agreed. I convinced you it's the same. But now I'm going to say that it's not the same. It's not exactly that. It's not the same, but maybe if you think really, really hard about Namoguta, actually, you will find out it's not the same. But maybe you will not. So let's hear what I'm talking about. So now we deal with Polyakov action, and we ask the question. So what are the symmetries of the Polyakov action? So the first one. Well, there are just Poincaré invariants. So x mu goes to x mu prime. I wrote this before. Mu plus mu. Then the second one is just reparametrization invariants. So, and again, we built it in such a way that our axes are scalars under reparametrization invariants. But gamma is a metric, right? So it must transform as I change my coordinate. And so the way how it transforms is in this way: dy c prime over dya, dy d prime over dyb, and then I have gamma prime. So all the indices must be up for the coordinates. Gamma, NB. So that's the way how the metric must transform. The easy way to see this is the way how I always remember is that whatever the transformations are, gamma, well, I have to keep forgetting to write down the right things. So upper indices here, if I have time, so this is a line element, it must be the same as a line element in unprimed coordinates. So then you'll get the transformation rule, so for how the metric components transform. So it's invariant under Poincaré, it's invariant under bullshit diffeomorphisms. Two, and that's the difference. Number three is the difference that distinguishes, well, at least it's not manifest. It's not manifest in the Nambu-Wood direction. And some of you will tell me why. There is one more important symmetry of the particle of action, and this is number three, very important. Okay, that's what means very important. And that's two-dimensional wild invariance. Okay, so what do I mean by that? So I have to tell you how all our fields transform under the symmetry, and we all agree that that's indeed a symmetry. So, well, our fields doesn't transform at all. Okay, so they are scalars. But the metric does transform. So my metric, while transformation, is a rescaling of the metric. So this omega is an arbitrary function that depends on tau and sigma. So why does the particle of action invariant under this while transformation? Well, the reason is that a square root of minus gamma, will go into a square root of minus gamma prime, which will give, so e to the 4 gamma, so it will be a square root of e to the 4 gamma, square root of minus gamma, is going to be equal e to the 2 gamma, square root of minus gamma. But then notice that I have gamma AB with upper indices, so it will go to gamma AB prime, which will be e to the minus 2 omega, gamma AB without prime. And so you can see that because of that, the square root of minus gamma AB, will go precisely to square root of minus gamma prime AB, and those two quantities are the same. So what we discovered is that there is this rescaling of the metric, and our action is invariant under this rescaling. Now, it's important that I emphasize here two dimensions. In fact, you can ask the question, well, you know, here we have two Wall-Street coordinates. What if instead of a string, you talk about a surface? Okay, I can take a surface, a table, and ask it to move in space-time. So it will span in space-time as three-dimensional submanifold. And so I can write down similar objects there. It will be exactly the same action. And so what distinguishes two dimensions, that's what I want to get across. So for example, so let me write it down what I mean. So I can write, we can write SP for d-dimensional object. Right? So in particular, the action will look like SP tilde. So it will be whatever the tension minus the tension of this object. And then I can write down d psi 1, d psi d. Those are just coordinates on the world volume of that object. And then I would have square root of minus gamma AB. Del A x mu, del B x mu. So I would have repeat exactly the same step. So you can see that that's a two derivative action. It's invariant under Lorentz invariance, under Poincaré invariance, but it will not be invariant under wild transformations. Okay? So it's not invariant under wild transformations. Unless d equals 2. And the reason for that is that I can repeat the same steps here. And so if I am in D dimension, so square root of gamma will go to e to the d times gamma, d times omega, square root to the minus minus gamma. But gamma ab with upper indices go to e to the minus 2 omega gamma ab, because that's just an inverse matrix. And so if I have e to the minus 2 omega, the inverse of that is e to the minus 2 omega. So in general, the square root of minus gamma, gamma ab, will go to square root minus gamma, gamma ab, e to the d minus 1 half times omega. So in general, when I do a wild transformation on a d-dimensional action, it will not be wild invariant. It's only when d equals 2, we have this special symmetry. And actually, what we will find out is that this is the symmetry that will be broken by quantum effects, and requiring that we do have that symmetry, even including quantum mechanics, we'll get our critical dimension, we'll get our 26, and we will get our graviton. In other words, I would like to claim that we wouldn't have a graviton without that. So now, the stupid question. Why Mambo-Guto action? We showed that it's equivalent, it doesn't have this one.
No gamma.
Exactly. We don't have gamma. In order to see this action, we have to allow an arbitrary metric rather than being made to the induced metric. Very good, guys. So any questions up to now? So we understand the symmetries. So now now the next step. Yes.
This Weyl transformation is part of the perfect radiation event.
No, it's not, because it doesn't change coordinates. It would have been, in principle, there are some, but notice that when I'm here, I didn't put front. So I'm not changing coordinates. That's why it's different from if you have more transformation. I'm not changing coordinates. All I'm doing, I'm taking a metric and scaling it. It's a very peculiar property. You can see that that's not the property that, for example, this action, in order to see the quickest way that what you're saying is not true, see that this action is always a requirement prediction invariant, but it's not wild invariant unless d equals 2. So this wild symmetry has nothing to do with diffeomorphism invariant. And the other way to see it, as I already mentioned, is that that transformation does not involve change of coordinates. I think of this as some additional global symmetry, but it's not really global because it depends on coordinates, it's a local symmetry. All right, guys, so next. So again, you told me you love Wolm. So the next thing is, when you have a theory of gravity, we now understand that we need this metric, because without this metric, we don't have wild symmetry. So, but once you have a metric and that metric can fluctuate, you have a gravity. So we have a two-dimensional theory of gravity, a classical theory of gravity. And so we need to, once we start writing equations of motion, well, if you involve, the next natural thing that comes about is that we start talking about the stress energy test, right? So we're going to do exactly the same thing. And we're going to ask what is the stress energy tensor of our theory, and what are constraints on the stress energy tensor that are imposed by the symmetry. All right, guys, so let's go ahead. So in QFT, quantum field theory, or classical field theory, if you give me the action, S, I can compute, and typically we talk about quantum field theories in flat space-time, but and you know how to compute stress energy tensor by using Noether methods. So, but you also probably have heard that the way to compute the stress energy tensor is to vary the metric slightly, even though it's a Minkowski metric. And so in particular, there is a formula that tells you, and you can go ahead and refresh Wolm. one of the appendices, that the stress energy tensor of any action is 2 times square root of minus gamma. It's not that. It's 2 divided by square root of minus gamma, delta S over delta gamma AB. Okay, so what I can do, I can take the action varies with respect to the background metric, and the variation gives me a stress energy tensor. Now, so this factor of 2, as you might have guessed, is just a convention in field theory, and in the Lidain string series wanted to be very special. So they came up with a different convention. So this is a way how we're going to define a stress energy tensor in string theory. So in this case, on this two-dimensional quantum field theory will become quantum. So this is in string theory. So it's going to be equal to minus 4 pi over square root of minus gamma delta S particle over delta gamma AB. So the only difference is a conventional factor of minus 2 pi. So that's it. So we're gonna compute the stress energy tensor of this two-dimensional theory up here. All we have to do is just vary with respect to the metric. But before we do that, I want to ask the questions: what are the conditions on the stress energy tensor that I imposed by the symmetries of the action, right? So constraints on TAD. If we assume that all the fields are on shell, constraints on TAD for physical fluctuations. Right, so the important thing is that when we write down the action, there is some field inside that action. It doesn't have to satisfy equation of motion. But what I mean here is that when I compute the stress energy tensor, I usually want to talk about physical field. So I want to, it will be a functional, it will depend on the configuration of the fields, but I want those fields to satisfy equation of motion. And so that's what I mean here. And what we want to do now is to ask, if I have a physical configuration, what are the constraints of the stress energy tensor? So the first thing that we're going to show is that diffeomorphism invariance, diff invariance on bullshit, implies that TAB is conserved. So if I act with a covariant derivative del A TAB, I will get 0. So that's the first condition. And the second condition, so this is diffeomorphism invariant, and then the second one is Wiley invariant, implies that. So this is a good condition. So this is like analog that the energy momentum is conserved, except that that's a condition now because they talk about theory of gravity. There is a gravity in two dimensions. So I must talk about. For non-trivial metric, I must talk about covariant derivatives instead of ordinary derivative. Now, Wiley invariance implies the stress-energy tensor is traceless. The trace of it equals to 0. In other words, if I take a gamma AB and multiply by TAB, I should get 0. So those are the two conditions. And so what I'm going to do now, I'm going to show you that that's indeed the case. I might skip it, but I feel it's a good thing to actually see how to derive that. Would you agree with me? Yes.
Are you taking the covariant derivative in that action?
Yeah, so it's a good thing. So covariant derivative. So I wrote normal derivatives.
So these are normal derivatives, not
well, that were normal derivatives, but what I'm going to do now is to replace that with a covariant derivative. Mm-hmm. And will it make it will make you happy. But for the guy who will not make it happy, would that guy feel a difference? That's a question for you guys. Is there a difference whether I put a covariant derivative there? Okay, the answer is no, that's the right answer. And the reason is what?
For two dimension, I think the control symbol relation is
no. No, because it's a scalar. See, if you have a scalar here, so let me remind you this. Okay. I'm just going to remind you everything I can so that even if I don't go far enough, at least you don't have any questions about what we discussed. So if I have a tensor, right, and I take a covariant derivative and I have some object, so it has lots of indices, I don't know. Let me call it I, and so here I have A, B, C, right? So how does the covariant derivative act? So this is del I, F, A, B, C, and then there are Christopher connections, right? So then there is gamma. So then I have gamma lambda I A, and then there is F lambda B, C, and then there are two other terms. Right? So if I have an index up, then it will be del I F A, and then there will be, instead of minus, there will be a plus. So here I would have A, and then I would have I lambda F lambda. Okay, and if you have more indices, it will change. The only thing is that if this thing is a scalar, so if my object is a scalar, then the covariant derivative is the same as an ordinary derivative. Okay, so that's why there it wouldn't make any difference. Now, the beautiful, so this is a good thing to remind you, the good thing about covariant derivatives is that, well, metric depends on coordinates, right? So if I have something like, something del I, if I have del I, and this del I acts on, here I have, sorry, I'm running out of chalk. Okay, so here I have, say, gamma AB, gamma CD, square root of minus gamma, and then some function or some field, something like that. If I have an ordinary derivative, that would be a difficult thing to compute. Because it would, so all these guys depend on coordinates, and I would have to add on gammas as well. However, if I have a covariant derivative, so the property of the covariant derivative is precisely such that action on the metric vanishes if your connection is compatible, is metric compatible. So if that is the case, then all this stuff I can simply, so this will be the same, square root of minus g, and I will just act on my function. So this is some of the properties that we're going to use in a second. Right, guys? So, good. So let's go ahead and see how those two properties, we're going to derive it without actually computing the stress energy tensor for now, and see that they are indeed the consequences of two things, physical fluctuations and symmetries. So how do we show that? Well, so the first thing is physical fluctuation. So for physical fluctuations, if I have fluctuations, if they are physical, they satisfy equation of motion. And so in particular, one equation of motion that is satisfied, delta S over delta gamma AB, must be equal to zero. Okay, so if I vary with respect to the metric, then delta S over delta gamma AB is zero. Now, so let me start with the second one. So wild invariant, right? So under the wild transformation, So under Weyl transformation, what do I have? I have that, well, first of all, what are the Weyl transformations? Gamma AB goes to gamma AB, each is a 2 omega. And so under this Weyl transformations, we show that S-particle goes to S-particle. And this is for any, the important thing is this is true, this is true for any omega. And so in particular, this implies that delta SP over delta omega equals to 0, right? So if I try to vary the political action with respect to omega, I will get 0. Now, but on the other side, you can see that one transformation acts only on the metric, and so variation with respect to the omega, I can write down as variation is variation with respect to delta gamma AB, right? And then I have to times 2 gamma AB. Okay, is that clear? Because this all I have to do, I just have to vary with respect to this. Okay, so very good. So what we have the 0 equals delta S particle over delta omega, which is 2 gamma AB times delta S over delta gamma AB, which is 2. And now I have to recall that my stress energy times the TAB is going to be equal, is defined in this way, minus 4 pi over square root of minus gamma delta S over delta gamma AB. So this guy is the same, the variation delta S over delta gamma, and square root minus gamma over minus 4 pi times T AB. And so you can see that the invariance of the action with respect to the Weyl parameter omega requires that gamma AB TAB equals to 0. In other words, the stress energy tensor is stressed. So let me do the diffeomorphic one, and we will end for today. So the second thing is that we study invariance under Wolff-Schmidt diffeo. And so we know again that S particle goes to S particle under diffeomorphic transformations. Or in other words, what this implies is delta, well, actually what I said here, I don't need this. I will not need this, okay? I will never need that. So delta S, so this is really just a consequence of the signature and nothing else. So if I know that my action is invariant under diffeomorphic transformations, then delta S over delta gamma AB, okay, must vanish. Provided, so now I'm putting a constraint, provided that delta gamma AB is due to change of coordinates, right? So there is a variation of the metric which will be physically different from the one we started with. And then I can change a metric by simply changing a different, by changing coordinates, which is exactly what you can notice with invariances. So now I'm putting a constraint on this delta gamma AB and saying that I look at the variations only such that they're due to change of coordinates. So what are those transformations on the change on the coordinates? Well, so at the linearized level, so on the wool sheet, I had coordinates y sub a, right? So now what I can do, I can say that y sub a goes to y sub a plus, I just need to take care of the indices. Okay, so here is an index up, right? Plus some function psi sub a. And so this function depends on tau and sigma, right? So I'm just making a small change of coordinates on a wool sheet. And so if I make this change of coordinates, I can ask how does my metric changes? And to linearized level, gamma AB goes to gamma AB. So you can look this in the Easter wall. So there is a covariant derivative here. Psi b minus delta d psi a. So that's how, or you don't even need to look at wall. So that's just do the change of variables and do it at the linearized level. And so you will find out that that's exactly how the metric will transform if you change coordinate. And so this tells you that at the linearized level, delta gamma a b is given precisely by this combination. So it's this, and for delta gamma AB with the upper indices, I would have simply plus. To raise this indices as well. Okay, very good. So once we understood this, then we can vary the product of action, right? And so the variation of the product of action delta s, I can write down minus 1 over 4 pi alpha prime, an integral, right? So here, here I will have delta s over delta gamma ab, right? So the variation of the action with respect to the metric. But normally I would put an arbitrary variation on the metric. But I'm not going to do this. I'm just going to put the variation of the metric, which is due to this diffeomorphism invariant. And because my action is invariant under reparametrization, so it must be equal, this stuff must be equal to zero for arbitrary vector psi b. So now if I look what is here, so I have minus pi sweep, I don't have this because I write out the action. So if I write, so what I have here, this guy just t a b, right, with the upper index. I'm just going to put an index up here, and then up an index here, plus B and A. Okay. So then the stuff, this variation here, will be 4 pi, square root of minus gamma. Then I have T A B. I think I screwed up. Yeah. Square root of minus gamma over 4 pi. So the variation delta s over delta gamma just gives me the stress energy tensor. And then I have del a over psi b plus del b over psi a. And so this quantity must be zero for arbitrary vector psi a. So if I look at this first piece up here, so I have del covariant derivative acting on psi, but I can integrate by parts. And so for now, I'm cavalier with boundary terms. We'll go back and discuss it later. So now this covariant derivative, I can, as I reminded you, I can pull through the square root of the determinant. And so I will just have a minus sign in front. So I will have a square root of minus g over 4 pi. And then I have this covariant derivative active on TAE. And because stress energy tensor is symmetric, I'll just have a factor of 2. Both terms were given as a contribution. And then I have to multiply it by psi b. And so this must be equal to 0. So because this is equal to 0 for arbitrary psi b, the only way it can be is that our stress energy tensor is covariantly constructed. Okay, so again, I'm emphasizing that these properties of the Wolschmidt stress energy tensor, namely the conservation and the tracelessness, are just consequences of the symmetries that we impose. All right, guys, so that's it. And what we start doing, so next week we will derive the stress energy tensor and explicitly show that, just derive the stress energy tensor. And then after that, we're going to go ahead and derive equations of motion and start quantizing the string and point particle in light form. Now, homeworks, after a little bit, we'll decide with you how many homeworks we'll have. And normally, I would ask people to do from Polchinski some problems. And I'll do the same. Thank you.